A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Moment of silence for Cubs catcher.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, this is Kim. With me is Jeff. It might be just the two of us today, but, well, we may or may not have surprise guests. We'll see. But how is it going, Jeff?
Going well. Look forward to Memorial Day weekend, already next weekend. I can't believe it.
Oh yeah. And the Cubs do have an off day tomorrow, which is probably when most people are listening to this.
Surprise, motherfucker.
It's Mr. Kellogg. Welcome.
Hello.
Speak of the devil.
All right.
Well, thanks for hanging out with us, too, Adam. We were just about to talk about the slog that has been these past couple of weeks. There's been just a lot of frustration, and I think we do need this as a little therapy session just to tell ourselves that the world is not ending. If I have the record correct, the Cubs are now 26-22. That's 48 games. If my math is correct, that's 114 games remaining. And hopefully the Cubs get some guys back soon on Tuesday, because they seem very reluctant to use the injured list for certain folks. But we will definitely see about that. I do think we can talk very positively about the rotation. We might not talk as positively about our two interim middle infielders. We might talk a little bit more positively about Pete Armstrong and what the Cubs might intend to do with him, especially with, you know, injuries continuing to pile up. Luis Vasquez is reportedly coming up to the Cubs for his major league debut, so that's really exciting. And there's a gentleman down in Iowa named Brennan Davis who's been tearing the cover off the ball, and eventually they might reward him with a call-up as well. So, yeah, there's a lot to get through. How's that for a plan, gents?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
I love it.
As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
Right. So, yeah, I was kind of looking at the scoreboard and seeing that Yu Darvish, former Cubs legend Yu Darvish, was shutting out the Atlanta Baseball Club. And that was really cool. And I know Jeff has been clamoring to trade for Yu Darvish. I do not object to that. I think that's a great idea. I don't know if it's going to happen, because the Padres, as you may or may not know, are one of the six current teams in playoff position, although they have a sub 500 record. And again, this being, you know, mid, late May, that means nothing. So who knows if they're going to sell. But and in the meantime, we do have a Japanese pitcher of our own, Shota Imanaga, who's been very, very good, like insanely good, like almost video game good. And it's been a pleasant surprise. I've been very happy about it. We're very fortunate to have him. What do you guys think?
We just got to right that cosmic wrong and get Yu Darvish back. Even if despite the way that the rotation has gone this year, injury-wise, I kind of feel like we don't actually need him.
Yeah, I kind of wish that I had picked him as the as my prediction for the NL Cy Young Award winner, because I think, what is that, 25 straight shutout innings? Oh, wait, I did do that. Yeah, I would love to get him. I think it's probably low likelihood, but Shota, what the hell, dude? This guy has been so much fun to watch, just masterful. He like, he's basically the opposite of what we've seen from Kyle Hendricks. Some of that might be due to nagging injuries. Have to imagine, you know, that is what's involved. He's been so repetitive in his delivery over the years. So you do, you know, it makes sense to suspect that there's, you know, something physically not right with Kyle. But Shota just knows exactly where the ball's going, and the hitters don't. You know, he's placing it exactly where he wants it to. It's got the, as Tommy Hotovy describes it, the shape of the pitch that he wants. Very deceiving. I believe it was the Pirates manager yesterday said that guy's going to give hitting coaches nightmares for the rest of this year. The timing, he adjusts the timing, he adjusts the speeds. He doesn't always even carve up the border of the strike zone. Sometimes the fastball of his, he'll put it right over the middle of the plate sometimes when he wants to induce contact, but it's not arriving where and when hitters are expecting it, and they're just not getting very good contact. It's got so much personality, just so much love for everything going on every time that guy takes the mound.
Yeah, that surprised me on both fronts. I mean, I don't think any of us expected him to be this good. But so, you know, the performance, the numbers have looked great. But yeah, his personality too. I'm surprised by how much, like, he's become my favorite player of the team already in less than 2 months here.
Yeah, I'm kind of bracing myself for the inevitable blow-up start and for, you know, people who don't pay attention kind of complaining about him. But you kind of think, hey, it's a 92-mile-an-hour fastball at best. Maybe he'll get to 94 every now and then, but it's basically like low 90s. And yet, like Adam said, he's placing it exactly where he needs to. And he's doing it, it seems, better than he was in Japan. Because in Japan, like, that's part of, like, where our worries were coming from, is because he was prone to giving up the long ball. And that hasn't happened to the extent that we thought it would. And maybe some of that is just early season luck. But he's faced some really, really good teams. And he's also faced the same pesky Pirates club that just won the series against the Cubs. So it's kind of like you can't poo-poo away his results. They are, as far as we can tell, they are real. And he's sustained this for at least, what, 9-10 starts now? It's pretty crazy.
Well, he also has had the early season, you know, expected advantage of mostly pretty pitcher-friendly days at Wrigley. Even Saturday, with the wind, I mean, with, you know, it being probably the warmest game to date for the Cubs, typically when it's warm, you are expecting the wind to be blowing out and the wind to be blowing out to left. And that really doesn't typically spell good fortune for a left-handed pitcher. It was warm and the wind was kind of blowing in. So I don't know how he managed to pull that one, that little weather aberration out of his back pocket, or if that was just luck. But yeah, an 80 degree day and the wind's blowing in, you're not going to see that very frequently. But yeah, there are going to be some days during the summer at Wrigley when the wind's going to be blowing out, and no matter who's on the mound, anybody giving up fly balls is going to see it leave the yard. He has shown somewhat of an ability to change and adapt his pitches to, you know, bring about the results that he's wanting as far as ground ball versus fly ball. So who knows? But yeah, he was fortunate that, you know, a couple of the balls that were hit yesterday stayed in the yard. But you can't expect him to stay sub one ERA all year, but he's not getting anywhere near the kind of luck that would make you think he's not still going to be a damn effective pitcher throughout the season. So it's pretty encouraging. You love to see it. And I just love how well he has been welcomed and introduced to this team, this fan base, the media, just a really great story. I saw this note that he had, you know, gotten a drink from Dunkin' Donuts and no one noticed him. And he told that story, and, you know, it's just, he's so apparently a shadowy figure. He can just move through Chicago with nobody noticing that he's there. It's pretty incredible.
It's part ninja, right? Because that's the way he's able to deceive you with his pitches. I was looking up his Fangraphs stats. That this should include Saturday's start. His ground ball percentage is at almost at 40%, which is a lot higher than I think most of us thought. And he's keeping the ball in the yard, thanks partially, I guess, to the weather. But also, I don't think he's allowing that much hard contact, really.
No, I don't know. Absolutely, Jeff, right.
Yeah, Jeff, do you know, like, the standard, like, at Fangraphs, it says his hard contact percentage is 21.1%. I don't know what his barrels are, but it seems pretty good to just, like, say only one-fifth of the balls that I let him play are actually hit what would be considered hard in the StatCast era.
Yeah, I don't have context for what the right averages are. We need more X so-and-so data.
Yeah.
Like hard hit plus.
Yeah, but he throws that fastball. It's a 92 mile an hour average velocity fastball about 60% of the time. It's a little under 60, actually. It's 58.6, but they know it's coming. And most of the time, they don't seem to be able to do anything with it. It's kind of fantastic.
Yeah, and everything you hear back from the opposing hitters is along the lines of, yeah, he's a great pitcher. It's really difficult to hit him. You know, it's not one of those things where it's like, we have no idea why our results aren't better. Like, it's been a challenge for hitters, and, you know, that's really cool. And somehow he's not the only Cubs starting pitcher that is just sneaking up on everybody and just limiting runs as well as just about anybody in the league. Assad, his teammate, yeah. His partner in crime. Incredible stuff.
Oh, the ass man. Yeah, like, if you look at Imanaga and Assad and they're out on the town, you don't think of them as super elite athletes, but they're doing things that you consider people who are in the running for Cy Young awards would do.
They look like the computer club. Let's face it.
That's good, because, you know, the front office is full of nerds now, but they're the nerds that are actually on the field doing the thing.
The front office, the front of the rotation, whatever it takes. Revenge of the nerds. Here we go.
Yeah, and I think it's this rotation. You did not expect it to be fronted by Assad and Imanaga. Like, you kind of expect that Imanaga to hold his own, but not be as elite as he's shown. You actually expected Steele to be the ace, and he's coming back from injury, and I guess there's some rust in there because he's been leaking runs all over the place. It's kind of upsetting, but I think, like, the velocity's there, and he can generate some really silly swings, but, like, I think this is true for a lot of the players that are struggling, and probably for players who aren't Cubs, but when they miss, it's a meaty part of the zone, and that is usually where batters do their damage. So that's what I've been seeing anecdotally, is just missing in the zone where you're in the guy's wheelhouse, and of course you're going to give up a long ball. But there's also some weird, stupid luck involved, because a lot of the runs being generated by the Pirates this weekend were of the, I would call, dishonorable variety, where it's just like, here's a flare, here's a bloop, here's an infield single that Morel can't handle. And it's like, does the pitcher really deserve that? But they're just not able to pitch out of every single, like, BS jam.
True. But then again, if the Cubs managed to pull it off, I would have been pretty happy too. Number of runs they scored this weekend.
Yeah, but see, the Cubs aren't getting into that luck. Like, there was the time, I believe we talked about this last time in Atlanta, where Seiya was hitting everything on the screws, or maybe that was Pittsburgh, but, like, they are in one of those kind of funks where everything is being hit right at the guy, no matter how hard you're hitting it. And then when you do get on base, suddenly it's Mastroboni or Madrigal that's up. And it's been pretty bad for the offense. And it's just by the grace of the baseball gods that the rotation and even the bullpen now is keeping the Cubs in games long enough for them to give it a try.
Yeah, and it goes to what one of the strengths of this team is supposed to be, and that's up the middle defense, which it's been there in the outfield in spades. But up the middle in the infield, yeah, I'm not thrilled with Madrigal and Mastroboni's contributions thus far this season. But at the same time, you're really not looking for them to be your starting middle of the infield tandem for this long. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's tough.
It reminds me of when, this was many years ago, when the one season when Aramis Ramirez got hurt and missed a ton of the year, people were complaining that their backups couldn't replace his production. And I was like, what team has a backup that could immediately just fill in for an all-star without blinking an eye?
Yeah. It's especially because they're pretty solid defenders and good hitters. Yeah, you might have one guy who can, you know, fill in really well as a utility guy, but expecting two guys to shoulder that load, to work well together defensively, it's asking a lot, especially, I mean, just the whole overload of injuries so far this year. It has been incredible that they've kind of risen above and still managed to produce consistently and win consistently. But yeah, you got to imagine it's starting to catch up to them, especially on the defensive, you know, when it touches the defensive side too. It's not like we have, oh, our defensive replacements are in, so at least they're holding down the fort. It's like, no, it's two Gold Glovers who've been sitting on the bench all week and you're losing their bat. So yeah, you want the guys to do well, but you can't really get too upset when they're the MASH unit out there.
Yeah, I totally get that. And it's kind of weird how they, for the past week, basically didn't put Nico on the injured list. I guess they were banking on, okay, we might miss him for 6 days, but we don't want to miss him for 10 days. And now they're at the point where, like, the part of the reason why I thought that they didn't put him on the IL right away was because he would be the corresponding move for Dansby coming back from the IL. Or that, you know, basically, if you look at the options on the 40-man before you even, like, do a move for David Bote, which seems like the break glass in case of emergency option at that point, it's Mervis. And then it's Luis Vasquez, who apparently is getting the call-up. It's Kevin Alcantara, Canario, and Brennan Davis. So those are the guys that you have to choose from before you have to do any, like, major finagling with the 40-man, right? And it also happens to be that only one of them could back up shortstop, and that's Luis Vasquez. The rest of them are either outfielders or should probably never play defense in a Matt Mervis, you know? So it's kind of like their options were super limited. Adam makes a good point. Like, at this point, the Cubs are treading water. If you take a look at the standings, they are one of five teams in all of the National League with an above 500 record. And they actually hold their second wild card spot by about 2.5 games. The fortunate thing is that the Milwaukee Brewers aren't pulling away. They're only two games up. So the Cubs have been very, very fortunate that basically they're in a crappy league and kind of a division where the division leader right now can't pull away. And I think, you know, depending on what they do on Tuesday, maybe the off day helps. Maybe they get that spark, because I imagine that the pitching will continue to be solid, but we really need the guys who are already on the roster, like, you know, Ian Happ and Michael Bush, to really step up. The catchers, you know, they're supposed to be game managers, but get a hit every now and then, guys.
I was kind of surprised by how rough Yan Gomes has looked I thought he had a much better year last year than he did. Maybe he just had more clutch hits or something, but his numbers were definitely a lot lower than I thought.
Yeah, and I guess his catching defensive numbers have taken a dive this year as well. So kind of wonder if he's hurting. Does he just really miss someone who's not on the team anymore? Is he out of gas money? You know, whatever's going on, I don't know, but he doesn't seem to be producing on either end. You know, if they're responsible for the starting pitching, you know, being what they are, that's great. But if they're not doing the defensive job as well as what they're hoping, that's when you start to worry a little bit more.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the defense, because one of the things that was really irking me during this entire run is not just like the stupid hits that they were getting, like infield hits and bloops and stuff, but the fact that once they get on first base, the pitchers aren't holding the runners very well. Like there was that one game where Shota picked off Ronald Acuna like twice, I think. Or maybe that was someone else. Like that really happened, as far as I know. It probably wasn't just Acuna. It was probably like, you know, others. Do you guys remember what I'm talking about? There was one where they basically picked off the guy from first base twice.
So Acuna had been picked off twice in the previous game before.
Oh yeah, before that. Right.
And then Imanaga got he picked off two different Braves.
Okay. Yeah, it's all melting together in my brain. But yeah, other than that, like the moment somebody gets on first base and you don't have a guy with just like that, that's just another thing about Shota Imanaga. He seems to field his position extremely well for a guy who doesn't look like he should be an elite athlete, right? But
he had a play, I don't remember who it was against, but he took a ball that Michael Bush was appeared to be starting to try to field, and Imanaga actually realigned his route to the ball so he would be in Bush's line of sight so he could point him to first base so that he would cover instead of coming off the base to try and field the ground ball. And Imanaga at that, you know, that circuitous route through his sight line still rushes at it, grabs it and flips to Bush for the out. In this right. way that you could see it happening, and it was just like that was next level field general management on a play. Very, very cool to see.
Yeah, he's deceptively fast too. Like, you know, when he covers first base, you're just like, oh man, that was an infield hit. No, wait, there's an Imanaga. He's taking the feed from Bush. You know, that is great. But I don't know if it's pop time or what, or arm strength, but they just can't throw base stealers out. And that is a whole nother set of problems for the pitchers, because now, you know, they got to be in the stretch. They got to worry about the guy in scoring position and silly things like that. Like, I can't actually remember the last time a Cubs catcher threw somebody out trying to steal. That's another issue that they have to contend with, aside from the fact that they might not be framing as well as they could be, and thus like losing strikes for their pitchers and therefore making them throw extra pitches. And also they're just not hitting. So that's another thing. But, you know, every pitcher seems generally happy with the catcher, so we can't complain too much. But that's just kind of what I'm seeing.
You kind of wonder if possibly there's just a situation where they've been playing several teams with some really, really good base stealers. The rules still are geared toward promoting stealing, and there have been some really fast runners, as Miles Mastroboni can attest. Yes, that dude has gloved about 6 infield singles in the last 2 days. On plays where he just couldn't throw the guys out. And it wasn't deep in the hole stuff, you know, maybe one or two of those, but a lot of just, you know, slow dribblers to short that he was not able to throw out, you know, guys I didn't realize were that fast, but it wasn't even close. So, you know, maybe it's just been some speedy runners who were swiping some bases. I don't know. It has been a lot. It seems like the hopes for double plays have gone to die pretty fast, seemingly no matter who's on first, you know, outside of Rowdy Tellez. but yeah, it hasn't been fun to watch.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think also if you are putting a guy in who he can play shortstop, but he's not the regular shortstop, his clock's probably off. So that's part of the reason why he wasn't able to get oomph behind the throws or get his timing down so that he knows, oh, this guy's running and we got the scouting report. Maybe I should go a little faster. Because I saw a few complaints about the fact that he kind of lollygagged a couple of throws and thus, again, cost his pitchers a few extra pitches.
I kind of wonder how much of that is driving the call-up of Vasquez. Is it that Swanson and or Horner aren't recovering as fast, or is it Mastroboni is not as talented an infielder as what they're wanting as a backup? So
I think they probably just need someone to give Mastroboni a breather, maybe, because I think he's used to playing every day. And on top of that, too, like going into the season, maybe I cursed the injuries by saying they needed to keep Mastroboni around because he could play shortstop. And then I was like, wait, he's the third shortstop. Who cares? Now he's playing. But like, who plays shortstop if Mastroboni goes out? I mean, it's the kind of thing where you got to have somebody who can play the position, even if they're totally zero at the bat.
That might actually be Christopher Morel, like as the emergency shortstop. If that happens, you can't have Madrigal do it. At that point, like if you, like Adam said, you have an issue with either Dansby or Nico, your shortstop situation is severely limited. So then you kind of take a look at the rest of the roster. You realize, hey, P. Crow Armstrong hasn't played in a little bit. He pinch ran today, but he basically hasn't seen a game for quite a while now. And then you look in Iowa and you say, well, Luis Vasquez, he broke out with his bat, you know, last year. He seems to be hitting pretty well. Maybe there's something there. Who knows? Maybe it makes sense for him to, like, if the best case scenario is Dansby and Nico are fine. They're going to come back on Tuesday. You're bringing up Luis Vasquez to take over for Miles Mastroboni. Nick Madrigal is still your backup third baseman, right? Along with Patrick Wisdom, if they feel comfortable letting him try. But even if now you have a viable third shortstop option behind Dansby and Nico, who probably aren't even 100%, but at this point, they're probably in a quasi-emergency mode where they're like, we can't slip too much further.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just that this is just insurance. I don't think it, I'm going to read too much into Dansby or Nico with this call up. I think it's just more of a, where we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants here. And maybe we should have another shortstop on the roster. And if it's just for 2 days, it's just for 2 days. That's kind of what I expect / hope, knock on wood.
Yeah. And it will probably not, I'm guessing we don't find out the full details until, you know, possibly Tuesday. If, you know, the day off, it seems like they don't announce the moves until the like late morning of the game day when they're actually making a move. But I guess we'll see. It's been weird. This is kind of a side thing, but I've noticed it the past couple IL announcements or guys coming off the IL that being announced have been Craig Counsell dropping that information on his interview on 670 The Score here in Chicago. That, like, that's how it's come out, and that's not.
Coom is the ultimate insider.
yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Just figure he's a good enough communicator to deliver the news, and of course, you know, he's the manager; he would know what they're up to, because he kind of has to, right? He's got to write the lineup and all that stuff. Yeah, I guess they want to play this close to the chest, give them as much time as possible before making a move. And it kind of makes me wonder, like, is anybody scouring the airport to see if Canario or Brendan Davis is on a plane from Des Moines to Chicago, just in case? Like, they have 2 days to get them from Iowa or wherever Iowa is playing right now to Chicago for Tuesday night's game against Atlanta. So it's like anything can really happen. Essentially, they don't have to announce the lineup until the time they exchange lineup cards for the umpires, right? Like, what time is that game? It's at like 6:40 Central Time. So it could be 6 o'clock Central Time and we wouldn't know. So it's kind of up in the air, but there are a few options. I do think that they need a few infielders. So they're very unlikely to call up another outfielder unless they're just swapping with PCA who hasn't played. But
they could. I don't know who would come off the roster to do it. But as far as like finding room to play someone, yeah, it could be PCA, you know, dropping out. But I kind of wonder if it would be an injury. They seem to love shelving Madrigal with mystery injuries whenever they need to call up somebody. So I could see them doing that. But if they brought up Brendan Davis and started working Cody Bellinger at first base, sometimes, at least in a platoon situation, like anytime a lefty's going to rest Michael Bush and maybe give Brendan Davis some of the bats at DH, some kind of move like that to where they can have a few more of those outfield bats in the lineup.
Part of the logjam is that they've insisted on putting, I mean, I guess he's proven that it was a good decision so far, Mike Tauchman in the lineup every day. So that kind of eats up the DH spot since they've basically been either using it for Tim or one of the other three outfielders every day for the most part.
Yeah, and he's another spot where if there was a heavy platoon lefty pitcher that they were facing where they would want to rest Tauchman. But yeah, he's been great this season compared, you know, relative to what you're expecting, you know, getting on base a ton, working long at bats, great defense. I mean, this year early so far this season compared to last season, the outfield defense, Tauchman, PCA, Suzuki, Bellinger, and Happ, rotating through, that's a lot of really good defense out there. That's been pretty cool to see. Like at one point, I think it was Tauchman, Bellinger, PCA in the outfield. It's like, yeah, that's, I like that. That's some range.
Yeah. There was that one play where Bellinger almost knocked over PCA getting a ball that was, by all rights, the center fielders, because I guess he forgot he wasn't in center field anymore. But anyway, like, no harm done. Like, they have range, and that is really cool to see. I think one of the cool things also is the fact that even with this latest stretch, the Cubs have not appear to have lost more than two games in a row yet. This is actually the first time they've lost two series in a row all year, and they haven't been swept in a series yet either. So stemming the tide of losses is really, really good, all things considered. Like, you obviously you want them to go 162-0, but since no team in the history of MLB has ever done that, you know, just basically limiting the amount of losses despite all the slumps and bad performances and stupid baseball crap. I feel like, again, we are counting our blessings from last week, you know. So let's see what Tuesday brings us. Because, they are facing the Atlanta Braves again, who just got basically destroyed by Yu Darvish and the Padres this weekend. Actually, like, they are tied in the number of wins with the Cubs. It's just that they had basically a week's worth of games rained out. So they actually have played seven fewer games than the Cubs so far, which is really, really strange. Or maybe it's...
Oh, I thought that would have gone the other way around since they started the season in Korea early, too. So it's like they had an extra series.
What was Atlanta in Korea? No.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Padres.
the Padres and Los Angeles Dodgers were, but Atlanta is 26-16 right now after that loss to the Padres. So Cubs being 26-22, they're actually three games back of Atlanta for the top playoff spot. And then the Phillies, which everybody predicted, right? They are now the winningest team in the majors. So
they're on fire.
Yeah, go full Dombrowski, right? Yeah.
Well, and real quick, the nice thing about this Braves series coming up is that, you know, they had the night game today, and then they've got a doubleheader tomorrow before heading out here to Chicago for Tuesday. So that's kind of a rough turnaround for them.
Oh, okay. So they actually had a four-game series in San Diego that's ended on Monday, and one of them was rained out, right?
Were they in San Diego?
No, they're in Atlanta. Okay.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I don't think games get rained out very often in San Diego.
Yeah, I know.
It does rain in Southern California. They're lying.
Yeah, know? I don't know how it let's see. So obviously they played Sunday. I don't know. Did they have a game rain out on Saturday or
one of the games rained results? Out. Yeah.
So that Saturday's game was rained out. So it was originally well, let me make sure it wasn't gamed out. It wasn't rained out on Friday, and maybe they had a mutual. No, they played on Friday. So yeah, it was a four-game series scheduled already. But yeah, doubleheader tomorrow. So that's kind of a nice benefit. You know, the Brewers, when they caught the Pirates, the Cubs had, for their previous series, the Cubs had kind of exhausted the Pirate bullpen in the series leading up to that, and that kind of set up the Brewers for a nice series against Pittsburgh. So it's nice for the Cubs to kind of get that benefit of they've got a day off and they're playing a team who's playing a Monday doubleheader and then getting on a plane. So
I hope that's 36 innings for them.
Yeah. Rain delays and extra innings for them. That would be great.
Yeah, that's all we really have to say for this time, because really we just want them to find a groove, get some guys back, and really take off, because they're still really favored to get a postseason spot. They might actually be favored to win the division still, despite being two games back of Milwaukee. So, you know, let's see what happens, guys, as they say. So thank you for hanging out with me again. You can find us at obstructiveview.net. The theme song was by Rich Deanna, and the final out call from the World Series from 2016, which everybody should remember, was from Randall Sanders pulling it from the radio. So, yeah, any last words, gents?
Say it was weird that, you know, we had the Sunday game, and I've gotten used to having Pat Hughes do the Sunday game, and he did the radio and Zach did the TV, which I thought was really weird.
Yeah, it's funny. That's what I was going to comment on, too. I was so thankful to Marquee for putting Zach on television so that this time when I listened to the radio over the visuals, I didn't have to hear Zach laughing at every somewhat funny thing that Pat said.
Who did the fifth inning, then, when Spiegel. Pat took his poop break? Oh, okay. Was he better?
No, the Cubs still gave up a ton of runs. So
okay, that's fair. I mean, like
I think
you know,
he did it when Pat was doing the Hall of Fame stuff last year, and okay. You could definitely tell that he needed some reps. he was doing his best.
So he was still bad, but at least a different kind of bad than Zaidman was.
Yeah, I actually took my daughter to the park during that inning, so I didn't hear any of his broadcast. But I just note that the fifth inning seems to give the Cubs so much trouble, and I attribute it to the backup radio play-by-play guy.
Here's to good offense, good radio, and good fortune befalling the Cubs pretty soon.
Go Cubs.
It
was more than just a game.
I'm gonna turn this off, guys. I gotta pee so bad. Okay. Yes. See you guys.
All right, take it easy.
All right, good luck.
It was more than just a game.